Welcome to Voting Matters, a series of conversations about the voting process from WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Now, here's your co-hosts, Liza Holland, president of the Lexington chapter of LWV, and WUKY's Alan Lytle.
Welcome back to Voting Matters, our podcast about the civic process and your rights and responsibilities to vote. I'm Alan Lytle, joined by Liza Holland of the Lexington League of Women Voters. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Alan. I'm still kind of riding the high from our No Kings adventure over the weekend. It was really all about how we need to be holding our government accountable to what the Constitution says they're supposed to do.
Everybody was there to, you know, basically call for an accounting of what government's rights and responsibilities are, and that's transparency, which we'll get to in just a couple of seconds here.
Absolutely. I felt like this was the perfect time to be recording about transparency, because a lot of what the League does is really focus on holding government accountable. And for the very first time in over 100 years, last year, the National League declared a constitutional crisis. It's bad enough that our checks and balances are just not functioning the way that they were really intended and have for almost 250 years now. So it felt good to see a number of people out there saying we want our government to work the way the United States government has worked historically.
And recently, the League put out a report on government transparency. And what were the findings on that?
Well, I'm actually really excited to have our guest here, who is the expert in this piece.
That's
yes,
the segue.
That is
okay.
Absolutely the segue.
I feel very welcome.
Well, Jenny Lindell, thank you so much for being here. You have been an integral part of this transparency committee that the State League has been working on. Can you tell me a little bit about how you got involved in it?
Well, the State League, as you know, has a number of its own initiatives within the boundaries of what the National League has. And each state, because we are a United States, has certain issues. Even though there might be national trends, there's a state constitution, and there is a that fits within the framework of the federal constitution. I, in fact, once taught ed policy at several universities, and we talk about the sort of layer cake of the federal and the state government, and it's also one term used from the 1960s was it was actually a marble cake in which all of this is kind of swirled together. And it is sometimes very challenging to figure out where the boundaries of each government lays. But the commonality is that the citizens live in a state that live in the United States and therefore have constitutional expectations that are framed within our Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution, as well as framed within our state constitutions. And that's pretty much what we were really looking at the State League in terms of what one branch of government was doing, which is the legislative branch. And it happened to be a group of veteran League members who had been observing the state legislature since the early 1990s. I, as a matter of fact, had been out of the state for almost 20 years and came back. When I came back, I hooked up with the League again, and we started going to the legislature, and I was kind of shocked to see things that were happening that I would not recognize as the kind of give and take that I remember from going to committee meetings and watching the legislative process before, in which it seemed like there were even opportunities to speak from the floor almost spontaneously, whereas what I'm observing now is very, very strict, regimented, and you're lucky if there's enough time at all, even if you signed up to speak, to participate in giving information to the committees. In the past, the committees were the place where the work was done, and there was interaction because there was this participation from citizens attending these hearings, etc. Now, citizens are kind of treated as spectators, and they aren't actually heard in terms of their expertise or point of view.
Well, that's an unsettling change, isn't it?
Yes.
And so the thing that I love about the league is that when we decide to examine an issue, it's really a very thorough process. Yes. Can you talk a little bit about how you went from the feeling about how much has changed to actually documenting some facts around that piece?
Exactly. So we kept turning to each other and saying, how can they do that? Mm. Which is the name of the report. We've done part one, part two, and part three now. And how can they do that was just a kind of a chorus that we had whenever something would happen that just didn't seem to follow the way a bill is supposed to become a law in Kentucky. So rather than just going with that unsettled feeling, there were five or six of us that got together and say, let's look into this systematically. And we selected data that is held by the LRC. It is sort of the functional staff for the legislature. They work under the auspices of a 16-person board, which is composed of legislative leaders. But they, in fact, are the wheels that make sure that bills do travel from introduction to the committees to and follow all the processes that are, by the way, outlined in the Kentucky Constitution and put together by rules adopted by each of the chambers. So first order of business every session on the first day is the House adopts its rules and the Senate adopts its rules. So that also meant we were going through the Constitution, we were going through the rule documents, we were looking at bills, and we also selected as much data about bills that became law that we could find from the Legislative Research Commission's archives, and that went back to 1998. So we selected six sessions plus the current session, which at the time was 2022, and we filed our first report by analyzing how those bills that became law, what steps were followed, and then comparing those steps to the way the rule said they should have been followed. And that's when we discovered four things that weren't being followed.
Okay. Do tell.
Number one.
Yes.
That's my job here. Just number
exactly.
one.
Exactly. Number one, they're supposed to have a bill introduced, assign it to a committee. The committee is to discuss it, and then you send it to the larger chamber. So if it's a House committee, they send it to the House floor. If it's a Senate committee, they send it to the Senate floor. Well, what they were doing, after it gets to the floor, it is constitutionally supposed to have three readings. And in the rules, there's supposed to be space between those readings. A space of time, like the next day. This all would give citizens an opportunity to be able to talk to the representatives about whatever was passed out of that committee. So citizens can read the bill as introduced, watch what happens at the committee, talk to the committee, and then the committee can pass it, and they can still say, I'm going to get in touch with some more representatives or senators and tell them why this particular version might need some tweaking. So between all of those readings, you should have tweaking opportunities. And what we discovered was happening was they were skipping over having the committee report it out. They were having first and second readings before the committee had even met. They had just pulled it and put it on the floor, read it, not literally so, but claimed they had, and then sent it back. So go through two readings. Finally, it does come out of committee. You can automatically have your third reading. And then it would be on the floor to vote on right then. So there was no space in some of this. A very hurry-up tactic. And the second thing we discovered was if you were in a committee, even if you were a legislator and a member of that committee, you might walk into the committee meeting and never have seen a complete rewrite of the bill that they call a committee substitute. It wouldn't be posted online. It might be in hard copy in front of you, or it might have been sent as an email attachment the night before. But if you're a member of the public, you didn't get it. And if it's not online, you don't see it. And they could even talk about it and pass it before it actually appears online. So if you're in there to speak to a bill, and maybe you have the opportunity to speak, you get up, you go up to speak, and they start telling you that you're talking about the bill that it was before, but now that they are going to talk about this other substitution, then you're not speaking to the point. So doing committee substitutes with nobody else seeing what it is a problem. And it's even a problem for some of the legislators who may have gotten it in an instant. They may have been in another committee before they actually show up to this committee. They may have not even had time themselves to read it. So I mentioned all this skipping around the readings and holding those floor votes almost immediately. And then there's another little process. So once you go through one house with a bill, the house passes it, it goes over, it crosses over is what they call it, crosses over to the Senate and vice versa. Senate has bills, crosses over to the House. Well, what frequently happens, and it's not terrible, but the version that the House pass might not be exactly tweaked the way the Senate wants. So they could pass that bill, but they would have added in changes the House doesn't know about. So it's got to cross back over. And maybe what the House will do is say, no, we don't want your version, we want our version. So they call a conference committee. And the interesting thing about what we observed about conference committees, frequently both sides are just locked in. So they say the conference committee failed, and then they appoint a free conference committee. Now, the free conference committee can then show up with its report, and immediately that's what you got to vote on. Nobody gets to read the report. So that's a bit of a problem. We even observed in our second and third reports that sometimes they would just say the conference committee didn't work. You don't know why that it didn't work. The free conference committee met. You didn't know that it was appointed. And then they would say, and this is the bill we're going to pass, but nobody would have been able to read it before it did.
Wow, including the legislators that are supposed to vote on
including
it.
Including the legislators. So if you weren't in that committee, and this is true, you can't sit on every committee. I mean, There's so many of them. So the legislators who weren't on the committee might not know anything about it. It's just as hard for members of the media and the public to get a hold of that. You don't understand necessarily if you do watch the chamber's interaction, which this year is more difficult because of the construction at the Capitol. There's no gallery, and thus members of the public don't get to see much. So a lot of this seems very much the big smoke and cloakroom behavior that you think of as in the early, mid part of the 20th century, and not the kind of transparency you would expect in the 21st century. I mean, at this point, we ought to be practiced enough for people to participate. So those were the four things. We did another report to see if the first report had any effect at all. Found out they were still doing those four things, and we identified four more things that they were doing.
Wow.
So now we're up to eight things that make it very, very difficult for people to participate.
Wow.
And again, all of this is based on information about the bills that become law that you can just pull right off of the website. I will say that's one of the marvelous things about Kentucky's Legislative Research Commission is that all this information is publicly available. So you would think with that level of availability, you'd also get transparency. All the transparency we could find is like an after-action report. You can't actually follow it or do anything about it or intervene as a public citizen with all these other things going on. So here are the other four things.
Number five.
Yes. I knew you were going to ask. So long about 2022, they filed a bill that said they would not post something called pre-filed bills anymore. But in the conversation, not in the bill itself. Remember, get these things in writing. They did say in the conversation and the back and forth in the committees, but we will create a new website for draft bills, which That was 2022. What year is this?
2026.
We don't have a draft bill website.
Wow.
We don't. And that's really, really very difficult for everybody.
Yeah.
Including legislators, because you don't see the draft anymore. You don't have an opportunity to kind of see what direction things are heading. And you don't have the lead up time to contact whoever your representative or senator is and say, have you thought about this consequence? Here's a suggestion I can make about avoiding it. And it's impossible for any individual to come up with all of the different ways and unintended consequences that might roll out, which is why you want your constituents talking to you.
Absolutely.
The other thing that we found, so this would be number six.
Six, okay. She just keeps looking over at me like that.
Well, I figure you're the official counter.
That's right. As the official counter. Yes. Number
right.
six.
All right. Number six is filing something called shell bills.
Mm.
Shell bills are essentially a bill that has no real substantive language in it. It takes maybe 19 or 20 lines out of the current statute. And this year we found they might put a comma in where there hadn't been a comma before. So it really has nothing in it. Even though it's got a title, it fits all the criteria for being a bill. But there's everything about it is very vague. And what can happen is you can get a bill that is maybe half a page long that explodes to like 200, 300 pages.
Wow.
In the waning days of the session. So these bills are practically filed on the very bill deadline for each of the chambers. And they are kind of placeholders for somebody to fill it up later. Now, they filed very few of these up until about 2010. You know, there might be one or two a year up till then. Even in 2010, there were only about 14 bills. But over the past several sessions, what we're looking at now is shell bills that can a count of shell bills up to like 120, 140.
Wow.
And these are just sitting there. It's important to note that hardly any of them ever become law, but without the pre-filing information and without other kinds of transparency about what the agenda is even, you don't know which of those shell bills is suddenly going to go from 4 pages to 400 pages. You don't know. And that can happen.
And so unless you're a professional lobbyist or whatnot, then it's really difficult for citizens to be able to keep up with that kind of thing.
Right. And even if you were like a member of a lobbying group, like you had a passion for environment or something, even if you counted on them to do that for you, sometimes you call them and they know about the shell bills, but they don't know which one to tell you to pay attention to. So even the lobbyists aren't able to figure out what's happening. And of course, it kind of tricks the media as well, because even the various media would have different kinds of attention that, because there's all kinds of editorial boards and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's not written media. Even they are going to have a hard time figuring out in this mishmash of hundreds of empty bills, which one actually is going to carry water all the way to the finish line. And, of course, they can change the title, they can change the topic, and they can even change the statute that the original shell basically had targeted. So you have no clues on what it's going to be.
Seven?
Yes, we have number seven. So what we discovered with number seven was that a lot of committee meetings get canceled or don't get held early in the session. And then all of a sudden they're rescheduled or scheduled for after the floor session. And these are like surprise meetings. So if you're living in the far outer hinterlands of eastern or western Kentucky and you think that this committee that you want to see is going to be talking about topics that are important to you, you travel all the way in 2 or 3 to 4 hours one way, and then you find out the committee's not meeting at all. or that they're meeting at a time that would be after the, because usually the large chambers meet at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, it could be after work hours that the committee is actually meeting. Well, try getting into those buildings after hours.
Uh-huh.
Or it even raises some questions about whether or not, and a lot of people depend on it, that YouTube channel or the KET recordings of any committee meetings would actually be available because of when these committee meetings are being held. The other thing we noticed just this session is that committee meetings had in the past traditionally been about 2 hours long on the schedule. Well, this year they were only 1 hour long. We raised the issue and were told, well, that'll give more time for the committee members to meet with their constituents. Well, that would include then maybe having more information available about what the committee's work is than what you're seeing happen. And then the final thing that still concerns us is that there are official records that are supposed to be kept of all meetings, and we were having a hard time finding them. The most concerning is that the Constitution itself says each chamber is supposed to keep something called the Journal of Proceedings for that chamber. And when we went to press with our third report, you couldn't get a copy of the 2025 session. The only copy available was 2023. Now, this is really better than our first report in which they were still back at 2018 and 2017 in the fall of 2024.
Wow.
So the production has picked up a little bit, but there are some concerns about not being able to even see the hard copy journals. And if you go and try to order an electronic one, the one that was listed this summer as available was 2017. You would think electronic copies would be a little easier to update. So in this digital age, there is some concern about the fact that even though they had to scribe everything in the days in which the Constitution was written in Kentucky, we could be doing a little better than what's happening with the records right now. So yes, we have a marvelous source of information and data on that website, but none of that under our Constitution is official.
Wow. Boy, you've given us a lot to think about already.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, okay, now, how of all the questions that we have...
why does this keep happening?
Yes.
You know, the fact that you've drafted three reports, what has leadership said about your surveys?
Well, I think our first report was kind of viewed as a gotcha.
Mm.
And, of course, the easiest thing to do when you don't like a report is to say something's wrong with the data and the analysis. So that was the first reaction. Then there were some commentary about us not understanding the process, which was, I thought, a little ironic because it is the process. And furthermore, we didn't make up what the process was. It's actually in the rules that they adopt every year. So it's been interesting because when we can have individual conversations, and we've tried to do that,
mm-hmm.
We've been able to see where some information has become almost ritual. And so people, the legislators may not have actually read the rule. They just know the pattern that's set up. And for us to start showing this is what it says, for some people that was like, oh, aha, that's what you mean. Or they hear a phrase that's used continually every day, but they don't necessarily know the rule that phrase actually represents. And it's true in any profession, you know.
Yes.
We have shorthand. That's why we, you know, we complain that we don't understand what people are talking about from another profession.
Well, and that's, you know, when you get brand new people into the legislature, getting up to speed on all of those details and whatnot has to be incredibly daunting. In fact, I talked to a freshman legislator who was like, you know, I really don't see the problem. This is us trying to be efficient, to be able to pass laws. And, you know, my answer obviously was coming back going, yeah, but the whole point of the system of government that we have is to allow citizens to be able to have input in this process. What else would you say to that freshman legislator who's kind of been told, oh, this is so much easier?
Well, I do think efficiency has been the default. We can go faster if we do this. But that's the messiness of democracy, I think you learn in Civics 101, is that, yes, there's much faster ways of doing things because the deliberative process is exactly that. You have to deliberate, you have to think about it, and you have to hear from people you don't necessarily hear from on a regular basis. And I do think that that's really the league's role. As much as we want people to vote, we also want the people they voted for to represent all of us. Even if I didn't vote for you, I am a constituent with an opinion, and I am affected by the decisions you're making, which is, gets us into the democracy principle. We've just really landed hard on that. We, the people, have a right to participate in those decisions that affect us. And if I didn't vote for you, it still doesn't mean I'm shielded from your decision. I am not. I will suffer the consequences if you don't listen to me or to the people that you supposedly represent. So I do think that maybe even for a freshman, but particularly for maybe some incumbents, the fact that you keep winning doesn't mean you have a blank check.
Right.
You do have to be accountable and responsive to all your constituency. And the fact that only a few people don't vote for you doesn't mean they don't count.
Absolutely. And frankly, once you have won, it is your responsibility to represent all of the different people of your district. And so it aggravates me that politicians these days seem to constantly be campaigning and not governing.
I think that's a really good point. Get your head out of campaign mode and get on with governing.
Exactly. Because governing is for all of us. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, the league's role is holding government accountable, and regardless of what party is in office, right? We are a nonpartisan organization. It's about holding our government to the standards and the rules that they themselves create.
Yes.
So, yes. And unfortunately, it sounds like they are not necessarily doing that the way they need to.
And if it can be, you know, just a lack of mindfulness. Now the campaign is over, I have to do this. Or, as with the rookie, you can't accept the notion that because we've always done it, we're doing it right.
Yep.
Because once you get into a routine and it just becomes a little performance, you forget the meaning of it. You forget how it might impact somebody. Now, I do say that I understand why some of these hurry-up things might have happened. If you think about the tornadoes in western Kentucky and the flood in eastern Kentucky, some things do have to move fast.
But that should be the exception, not the rule,
right? Not the rule, mm-hmm. Exactly. So when we start looking at this over time across all of these sessions, what we see this escalation of moving from, you know, maybe 2 or 3% or 5% of the time using these hurry-up tactics, which it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, to now it's a third to a half the time. Everything seems to be an emergency, and it really isn't, unless you're campaigning instead of governing.
Yeah, and the physical removal of people being able to in person watch what's going on as well. I think that probably contributes to the malaise, if you will, of this the situation that's going on.
I think that has been a concern. Even the league expressed early on that not having a gallery for the temporary chambers, the excuse was basically how much it would cost to add that, and that somehow sitting in a room maybe 200-300 feet away and watching it on closed circuit TV was a good substitute. It's not the real time moment, and even if the gallery can't say anything, you hear rustling, you hear reactions. There is body language that can be exchanged. We're going to have to grit our teeth and get through it. But on the other hand, I think the point about not having your constituents physically present when you're making the final decision is an issue.
There's that piece of accountability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that it's not just you and your buddies around the table. It's you're representing a huge number of people out there. Yeah.
We do know with all the hot mic moments that happen that unless you have a physical audience, sometimes the fact that the spectators aren't there, you may forget the spectators can hear and see you on that closed circuit, but not in the moment. So it's always a delayed reaction.
And Janie, this isn't just limited to Kentucky. This is nationwide, correct? I mean, these tactics and these practices in the legislatures, it's more or less been adopted across the country.
Well, the rules about the process are very similar from state to state. I would not, because we haven't done a study in every state, I have no idea how often this is going on there. I would say that, casual observation, what's going on in Congress at the national level kind of makes you think, yeah, you may be right. This may be more widespread than you might think. I would say with confidence that we're starting to see, for example, at the beginning of some of the committee meetings in this session, there was a reminder from a few committee chairs to their membership that they should get their materials in an ample time for everybody to see it. Now, it kind of degraded over time, I think, but at least there was good intention starting out. And I will say, even in after our first report, that first day session where both houses discussed their rules and rule adoption, there was definitely conversation in the chamber about what rules might be acceptable and whether or not they needed to rewrite some rules. There have been minor changes two rules, not necessarily the rules we were trying to get them to pay attention to, but it's an incremental process, and
right,
it's deliberative. So you can't go in and order people to straighten up and fly right, but you can keep saying, well, we noticed this, and that's a good thing, and we noticed this other thing, and you just still need to work on it. Like, I would keep landing myself on this whole notion of a draft bill website. I think that's incredibly important and would really help the transparency and would also not slow them down as much as they're actually tripping over themselves now, because we don't know what's coming. And when that happens, everybody goes into emergency mode. And that, I think, is a little harder to deal with than if you just put it up there and let it come. Have people respond.
I can imagine that the civility factor that we seem to be slipping away from between all of the different people with different thoughts and whatnot, that type of behavior would only exacerbate that, because people get frustrated and now it's an emergency and now you're like really strongly stating your opinion, as opposed to having kind of a deliberative dialogue that, you know what, that piece of what you're saying actually does make mine a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And that old art of compromise, right?
Yeah. So you would think that the citizenship process would be make yourself aware of what the information is that the legislators are dealing with, and then provide information they seem to be missing, interact with them, have an opportunity maybe even to testify before them, interact with the ones that may not know about it but are up next when they get to the larger chamber. You would think all of that would go well, but that was actually kind of a trigger. The lack of those things was kind of a trigger for our first report, because one of the observations we made was it seemed like there was less citizen participation in the process and more citizen reaction out in the streets. So that really speaks to your point. If we can't have this dialogue, where am I going to go to get your attention? And of course, the League would support civil protest only. Nevertheless, the civil protest is an escalation that suggests that people's voices have not been heard.
Well, that's kind of a really good full circle discussion there. Janie, you have just been so full of information here. I really, really appreciate it. I would love to circle back just a moment, because you had mentioned some of the response to the reports. And you and I, when we first were talking here, talked about the people and the credibility of the people that have been involved in this research process. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about who the people have been? Because, I mean, you yourself, you taught civics history.
Mm-hmm. So the League's tradition is that we are a unified action and we don't necessarily call out our committees other than to note we had one. And I would love
You don't have to talk about specific people,
right.
But you know, I mean, I know that you have one attorney on that team.
Exactly.
That is very, very detail oriented and has a huge background in legislative.
Right. And that we have like at least three different kinds of data people.
There you go.
People with engineering backgrounds, people with education backgrounds, people with political science and public administration backgrounds. So when you start realizing these people, in many cases, have had a whole career, distinguished career, doing other things, they bring that with them when they start doing this volunteer work. And I have a lot of respect for the members because, like you say, if you get an engineer and a political scientist talking, you wouldn't think there was much common ground. And sometimes there's not, but it's really important because it does help us make our analysis of the data better. It helps us understand that there's more than one way that you can look at what you're seeing in the data. And as we all know, that's the whole point of a collaborative effort.
Absolutely.
And one would hope that would happen with legislation.
And I hope our legislators will stop and think about the fact that you've got people like this that are your constituents that are taking the time to really dig into this. And the thing about being a legislator is you cannot be an expert in all areas. And so when experts come to you and say, hey, you're not even following your own rules, it's better to not just dismiss it.
I think it is. And like I said, there's definitely some give and take going on. So the conversation has started. But I do think that the key points that I think you've made is, you know, you've got to shift your head from campaigning to governing. You've got to understand that you govern all of us, not just some of us, not just the ones who voted for you, but all of us. And then you've got to understand that among your constituents are people who are experts in some areas that you may have no background in. And that's why your constituents are a blessing, is that if you can delve into their knowledge base and make something better as you govern, wouldn't you want to do that?
Makes sense to me. And what kind of feedback, what we talked about from the lawmakers themselves, how has this fallen on the general public? What kind of messages have you received, or the League?
I think that it's been really exciting to see a number of people who were really awakened by the fact that the League was really advocating on their behalf. We've heard from a variety of constituents, including the media, who are also struggling with getting information just as the citizens are. And the Fourth Estate, they aren't a branch of government, but they were definitely placed in the mix as a voice for the people.
Right.
And as a communication conduit for legislators and the people. So they, many of them, when they are expressing their concern or appreciation for our work, are very often saying, we've experienced this too. It's really important to hear this. It's very important for the legislators to understand how important it is to us. They aren't working in a vacuum.
Right.
They might be working in an echo chamber, but they're not working in a vacuum.
Everything is politically polarized these days, and so someone is going to look at this through a partisan lens. And from what I heard some of the GOP leadership say, well, when the other side was in control, they did the same thing. How do you speak to that?
That's why we did our selected analysis all the way back to the late 90s, or the data we could get a hold of. But we did not, we did see it happened, but we did not see it at the rate we're seeing right now. And I think that is a very critical point. Almost any of these eight things that seem like a huge challenge to participation was minuscule. And by minuscule, I mean less than 10% of the time, in some cases less than 5% of the time. And now we're seeing it as much as 25 to 30 to 50% of the time. We reported trends, and as you may know, you get a pattern of data that goes up and down some years and back up. When you report a trend, you're reporting the trajectory. So I am delighted when it went down, but it doesn't stay down. Mm. There are a few things that went down this session and last session, but in some cases, we started to see it creep back up this session. So we haven't done the full analysis on this session because it's not over.
Right.
But it will take us a while to kind of process all that. And if we actually see a trend downward, of course we'll report it.
And that's awesome.
But what we're seeing is this bounce up and down. Sometimes the House is higher, sometimes the Senate is lower, and flip it over, sometimes the other way. But if we go all the way back to the late 90s, what you're seeing is a trend upward, and that's not good.
And we can put a link on our website to all of this data. People can go to the League website to see these reports?
Exactly. So we're at lwvky.org, and it's right on our front page. And you get the short four-page version if that's what you want. But we've also, as good researchers do, posted our data. So you can get more spreadsheets than you would ever want with more lines, because there are at least 1,200 to 1,500 bills in these sessions, each session.
Wow.
So, yes, we've got a lot of information for you, and you're welcome to plow through it.
And I would love to say for any listeners out there that if this is something that excites you as far as a way to participate and volunteer, I know the Transparency Committee is open to having additional volunteers participate. And here in Lexington, we have an observer corps for local government. And so, and that's really been a growing thing. We're partnering with Civic Lex. And so we're trying to get all of the different committees and whatnot of our local city government covered, so that you all will have reports and find out what all these boards and commissions and committees and everything else are doing. So we'd love to have you join on board.
Thank you very much for allowing me to talk about this and ramble on. We've got a passion for transparency.
And somebody needs to. And thank goodness for you, Janie, because it's the only way change happens. You've got to shine the light on a problem and have to admit that there's a problem before you can start to change it.
Definitely appreciate that.
And one more time before we go, Eliza, what's the League got going on for April?
Well, you'll start seeing us out in the community a lot more, registering voters and informing voters and all that kind of good thing. One of the things that really kicks off here in April is our candidate forums. And so we will be putting those on our YouTube channel and trying to spread the word amongst all different folks. And if you would go to LWVLexington.com, different times they were put together. There is a place for citizens to submit questions that you would like for our candidates to answer. So we would love to have your thoughts and ideas. What are the issues that are important to you? And we will go ahead and make sure to put those into the bank for our candidate forums. Thank you for listening to Voting Matters.
Bye-bye, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Voting Matters, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Voting Matters from the podcast page at wuky.org. We also have links from the organizations and guests mentioned in this program. See you next time for Voting Matters.